Thanks, guys. Good evening and welcome to our first Holden Village concert of the summer. Gonna have a lot. It's really a pleasure to have G. Barnes and company here to kick off our concert season. Let me tell you a little bit about G. G's not only a poet, he's a teacher of poetry and expressive writing classes and workshops for all ages. He has read and taught in schools and colleges both here and abroad. Besides three books of poetry, G has published concert and book reviews, essays for professional literary journals, articles for magazines, scripts for radio and TV, and film documentaries. And while in Hong Kong, during his time there, he hosted a program entitled The Jesus Program. So it's really a pleasure, and let's give a big Holden welcome to G. Barnes.
At least one thing about you. Some mornings you awaken, snapped like a twig in a Mohican movie. You bolt to the window, gawking, parting the curtains with your head, trying to focus on the spot of sky you want the moon to cover. You draw a breath you really feel. It reaches to Picasso. The sun is always a circle. It's the moon that intrigues you as she fills and empties. You're the kind who, as you slowly draw the shade, doesn't face the window. You're watching the room change. About tomatoes. Ah, these tomatoes. I realize I'm going to have to trust them. That they know what they're doing out here after all. To me, this morning, they seem rangy, dangerously tall. Too many blossoms and too few leaves to gather sun by which to ignite the action accomplished by every weed in the street, making food from light and carbon, making fruit from magic. That process looks hopeless now. I'll admit it, while I continue to be faithful, tending, watering, watching, waiting on the wonder of the plainly natural. Throats. We go down the slope over rocks to meet the water, ducking under trees and ripping wide a spider's web. Tilting back our heads, we let dark sky fall on our throats. We hunch up our shoulders, hoping words will come out, come in. We hope the words remember. All is already whole. That's the last one's from a work in progress, very long in progress, called Throats. And it refers to Allen Ginsberg's notion, which he stole from ancient Hindus, that poems are not born in the brain, they're born in your mouth. Thank you for being here this evening. I've been pleasured in reading at Holden Village many times over many years. And these are some of the best audiences I've ever had anywhere. So you graced me with your presence. And we'll kind of try to keep things rolling right along here. A lot of different kinds of material. the shape of the evening is that I'll read some poems, and then the musicians will come on, and then after the poem chunk and the music chunk, then we're going to do a thing that are little couplets where I read a poem and then there's a song that kind of is triggered by the poem in some obscure way known only to artists. Okay. And then I'll read a poem and then there's a song and then I'll read a poem and there's a song and then we all go home. Okay. I didn't know if you'd be interested in this, but this is two poems born out of the same experience. They're very different sorts of poems. And I don't think I want to gloss this much. I don't think it's necessary. If it is, maybe I'll do it afterwards. But maybe by reading the two poems, you can see the way in which an artist might treat the same, you know, painters do it. They treat the same subject in many paintings. This is the way a poet might do it, has done it. The first one is divided into several stanzas, the second, and then two segments. The second segment is one long stanza. I'll simply hold up fingers to indicate the two big chunks. It's called Factors of Two. Engineers talk like this. Shearing tension. Millions of parts must hold while a jet rips skies at twice sound's speed, suffering downdrafts and updrafts simultaneously. Against winds, against earthquakes, skyscrapers are designed with a built-in sway factor. To stand, they have to lean a little. Welded fast, they fall. Potters, separated by centuries, continents, and every language but clay, have long known that vessels they throw can own heat strength or tensile strength, not both. The sky outside our train to Karatsu matched exactly the light we rode with. We were many, pressed together, like the weeds I'd been watching crawl by. American weeds, I just thought. Then the window admitted the weeds but reflected our upright bodies swaying below the ceiling straps. The no masks of our face on the glass pulled up by the exhilaration of touring the upswept rafters on all Shinto temples and at the same time down by our exhaustion the coffins lowered vertically into the stuffed ground. We were left thin and vulnerable between extremes to every delusion. Just moving forward through Japanese weeds. It's one world, Walt. I'll gloss this a little and say that Walt Whitman was believed by Japanese people to be one of the few Westerners who could achieve Zen without ever studying it. He was immediately embraced by Zen Buddhists, has never been out of print there. Much in the way he was accepted by the British, the Japanese accepted him and have continued to study him. And long before Americans accepted him, the Japanese did. It's one world, Walt. All along the train tracks in Japan, I saw the same weeds we have here. The train was old, and we moved slowly down our narrow line. We were many, pressed together. Hanging from my leather strap, I felt harnessed to that ceiling. Humming a tune I slightly knew, I watched the weeds roll by. Then, out in a field just short of some pines, I saw Walt Whitman, the old loafer, stretched out on a knoll, scratching in his open shirt. His belly and chest looked like the field. His hat lay on the ground. His smile looked like a wrecked circus train. He was propped up on one elbow. Seven crows, grazed between us. One flapped and tugged at something and fell backwards on his can. Walt laughed and laughed and grabbed his round gray hat and threw it in the air, and it stuck in a pine bough and didn't come down. I watched his belly roll like a land surprised by earthquakes. One can, I do often, one can begin to hallucinate traveling alone after several days. He's seeing so much stuff and exhilarated and exhausted at the same time. I would consider this to be one of my most, I guess I would consider this to be my most Christian poem. It's an extended metaphor. The title simply sets for you where it is. There's probably nothing else that's not very... contrails, of course, are those lines you see in the sky left by jets. A thumbnail pairing are those things that when you trim off your nail, it's left. That's about it. Saturday, September, sunset, Kansas. 90 brown plain martens measured out along a rope, beads strung upon this prairie telephone line. Each narrow breast is turned towards our road, every pecan nut brain in every head swelled with bird dreams of wild winging soon, while feasting on mosquitoes midair, snap rolling, exploding in every direction. 5 miles above, an unseeable jet struggles west, contrail fingers scraping hard the azure canopy, the dome of the one world of us all. And near these scratchings, the moon is a farmer's thumbnail pairing, or God's. And we are all of us clinging, wind at our backs, suspended, just ahead of real dark. We wait on a merciful meal, just enough at least to tug us into whatever sleep awaits, when our own moments ripen perfectly and burst forth without a sound. And burst forth without us. This is called Blue Pillowcases Together. It's for Linda Carter. I have a dream of dinner with you. I have a dream of dancing. I have a dream of driving through a rainy morning together, sharing the wheel, sharing a cigarette, sharing the last diagonally cut sandwich half and pouring one another coffee and talking idly and laughing over the radio. I have a dream of calling the boss and playing sick and spending the day together naked in bed, loving and sipping and slipping into sleep and waking and loving again and reading and pointing to pages each for the other. A day surrounded by cluttered tea trays and Hiroshima ashtrays and rumpled newspapers. A dream of feeling your forehead when you're sick. I dream of folding your laundry and ironing a green blouse. I dream of buying blue pillowcases together some afternoon and having them be the last thing I think about just before I go to sleep at your side, your breath in my face, one night, weeks later. In one dream, I stand and listen to you taking your shower and forget what I'm stirring, something I'd wanted so much to turn out right, something risky, and ruin it, and realize it's ruined only when I hear the showers turned off. In another dream, we're standing close in a park. The children are playing. And without thinking, you reach to pluck a bit of lint off my sweater chest. I have a dream where we're sitting together talking. We both glance at the clock at the same moment and notice it's run down. And neither of us moves to wind it. And again for Linda, this is called Shawl You Can't Quite See. Linda, your loveliness drips, smeary precision, and yet you wear it like a shawl, easily and unthought of. This beauty of yours is no device. It can take adornment or do without any at all. You own it everywhere and run like sky, it in your hair, your hands, your eyes, teeth and gums and ankle bones, and that perfect hollow at the small of your back and the other at your throat. You stand only half knowing, or knowing not at all, that you're wearing it, this garment of comeliness, or if you do suspect anything, is it yours or does it belong to some other woman? One inside you, maybe, that you can't quite see. Before I had children, I wondered about what it would be like to not have them ever see any depictions whatsoever of people being killed. And couldn't manage that. You can't surround kids. This is a time when we lived in Hong Kong, and we lived in a lovely garden surrounded by three short flats, and with lots of different nationalities of persons there, families, and many of them Australian. If you know a lot of Australians, you know that Australian men, when given a holiday, know of nothing better to do than either build a barbecue or drink more beer than the other days. But they got in a carousel and some food and so on the day after Christmas, Boxing Day, which is when they handed out their presents. And this little carousel was the oddest looking terrible thing. It was had these little flat ponies, and it was not handsome in the least. It struck me watching this that this is what struck me watching this. It's called Watching Them Kill My Son. And it has this subtitle, Father Christmas Has Handed Out a Casually Bought Arsenal in the Name of the Prince of Peace. Are you one? Please be one. Who can understand how painful this is? Watching them kill my son? Watching these brutal little non-poets fire again and again, whirl around and around, murder him over and over, while young Aaron, too little to get the picture, blinks soft brown eyes and holds the flat horse more tightly. There's no music in the air. And in hen-like clusters, the other fathers, great ho-whores with fists made of hams and breath made of solid beer, laughing, reaching, framing glass after amber glass, gulp again and again, swallow over and over, glance around and around, but never quite notice the death rattle of new-bought multicolored weapons. The strange and quiet man leaning beside the carousel, or the empty pony who blink, gallops again and again, blink, whirls around and around, blink, trembles over and over. We're Native American, carrying four, maybe five tribes in our blood. We don't really use the word Native American. We call ourselves Indians. May as well. Chris Columbus did. We don't celebrate Columbus Day. We don't think he discovered America. How can you discover several million people? One of the things that is common to many tribes is the notion that geese are messengers. I heard geese on an urgent morning. This is called a round. These free geese wing to your north, blatting as best they can their hymn for you, honking a song Chopin heard clearly, Vivaldi, Mozart heard, and you and your brother unstrung those delicate violins years later, sawing, sawing, bowing like geese rowing. We see you winging. We remember the easy way you touched another's hand. You carry our songs, these hymns of these geese, the prayers of any of us, honor, the dance of Vivaldi. See you around. This is called She Gives, but the first line, two words, is not going to sound like it's like about that, but just be faithful and pleasant with me, and you'll see how that unfolds. This is written for Ann Tolo. She gives. She takes her time with flowers. Each blossom, every stem is placed just so, considering the many colors, all heights, the leaves themselves, she arranges them, line lengths of a lush single poem in the earthen vase. Whites punctuating yellows, orchids deep base purples, even pinks or risky reds, wedding out among oranges, exotic fruits, and the several shades and sizes of green foliage dancing amongst the midst of the whole lovely bunch. Other women whack, cram. This one, no. She plans, yet improvises. The result becomes both classical and jazz. No one taught her this. And these are things you cannot learn by watching. A couple of short ones in the Japanese style. People often have children write haiku. That's okay. It does not have to be 575. This happens to be. The second one's called a tatanka, which is a 57577. The only thing I can say to you if you're encouraging yourself or children to write haiku is do not write it indoors. Haiku are nature poems. Don't sit in a box to try to write nature poems. It's a silification of an ancient writing form. Buds open on green limbs while the wide river swells higher. Mountain melts, bring spring. Long pine needles pierce patches of blue sky behind. A trunk of red-gray aims towards some heaven or other. A man breathes. a question of timing. Water stood in a field up the bank behind us. I remember fishing with my father. His wide hands on the pole's cork handle, three fingers under the grip, the index and thumb pinching lightly the colorless line. From time to time, he'd check the minnow bucket. It was perforated. It sat in the river's edge. Where it dipped into the water on its way over to the knotty, exposed roots of a tree, the cord had gone all yellow. Well, the minnows were always okay, flashing silver in their little piece of river. The kids had torn. They want to hold minnows, and they want to let them go. And Dad stood in the shadows while I sat on the bank. Out front, time rode woven in the river. Afterwards, we drove up the rutted road toward the highway, our fish in the bucket in the back. My father's pant legs were wet up to the knees. He lit a cigarette, cupping his hands around the paper match, elbows on the wheel. He shifted down, and as the car lurched around the corner, we made the pavement, and he eyed the mirror. I turned to face him fully. I thought he was going to say something. He was a quiet fellow, my father. This, of course, takes its cue from the Chinese notion that you can never step in the same river twice. I always like that. And that notion common to so many cultures that rivers are symbols for time. This is a Holden Village poem. We'll kind of stay with that notion for a moment. It's called Riddles of the Water and the Ride. I'm sorry, I come from a place where this is not a creek, this is a river. Okay. A creek is about this wide. Right? Riddles of the Water and the Ride. I can hear the river, and I can hear the rain tease tin roofs. I smell the dark, wet lumber stack, new cut beside the only road, and taste brown, bitter coffee cooling in the morning air. I sit in oaken captain's chair, high on the porch, feet upon the rail. Geraniums bloom red on leafy green below, in yellow boxes neatly set in windowsills. A hammer rings over in the shed. Some kerchiefed girl strides off to make the beds, hugging linen, white and warm yet, from the dryers in the basement up the hill. Maynard starts the truck and backs her down the road. Fog slips up the valley, meeting snow left forgotten in the pockets of the peaks. The small birds whistle from the pines, and small boys test small puddles with small feet. The carpenter waits a moment beneath the porch roof, tries the leather gloves, and steps out into the rain, coming just a little harder now. Eaves drip. The breeze picks up a bit. A window slams against the morning cold. A couple strolls by down on the walk, deep inside themselves, in quiet talk I can't quite hear. And Jack and Becky slip from porch to porch, sharing a black umbrella brought from town. And half an hour later, I still hear the river, fuller. Wild, wide, and 1,000 raindrops join her. They ask, and river answers, those mountain morning riddles of the water and the ride. One more, which shall it be? it'll be this one. Oh, before I do that, I should pay homage to, I think it's important. William Stafford was undoubtedly the most influential poet to me. Our family knew him for a dozen years. He taught the kids their spelling lessons at a kitchen table. Just a lovely, lovely man. I would commend to you anything you can ever find that he wrote. He's from Kansas, and in the Midwest, when he's introduced, we claim him as a Midwesterner. He taught for many years at Lewis and Clark down in Oregon, and in Oregon, when he's introduced, they talk about him as an Oregon poet. He was the poet laureate of Oregon. And when he reads in California, they refer to him as a Pacific Rim poet. When he read in Japan and so on, they referred to him as an internationally esteemed poet. So everybody tried to claim Bill. This is called Ask Me. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden, and there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say. And I'll finish this segment with this one. Then I want to introduce the musicians. This is called Between Two Points. This is based on something I read in Scientific American, I think. Somewhere out in our world, men can do this. Sail asymmetrical outrigger canoes through 2,000 miles of Pacific swells with only stars for maps. They have over 100 routes in memory and sit awake all night, their knuckles white, on coconut fiber ropes with faces tipped heavenward. There's only water and sky to know. And so they know them. Thank you. Okay, here's who's coming up, and it's a really fine lineup. This is the segment for music, and then we'll do music with poems interspersed. Joe Crookston, kind of lately to the village, is a songwriter and singer and dancer and player with kids and writer and a laugher. David Campbell is our music director this evening. He's played professionally for about as long as he's had a beard. He does not play bassoon or the harmonica. David, join us, please. He's played folk, bluegrass, blues, country, rock and roll, jazz, classical, and pit orchestras for musicals. When he leaves Holden, he plans to form a bluegrass country rock band called the New Lost River Stony Ridge Rivers of the Riders of the Dusty Sage. John McDuff has played for years with the Seattle Symphony. He's played for years with people like Ray Charles and Elvis Presley. He's played with all the big bands and jazz bands. He's played for major radio stations, doing weird things like playing at NBC Live, and then during the top of the hour when they did the commercial, running across the alley and playing for CBS Live. A wealth of musical background there. Back to you. Aaron Barnes studied and concertized with classical violin, has won awards for that, plays acoustic and electric guitar, bass, and messes around with other stringed instruments and the piano. He's also a vocalist, and you know him from his work around here. I want to mention, too, some thanks at this point for David Moore, who is our audio and lighting technician this evening. Also, Jeff Dusney, who helped with that. I think there'll be tapes for sale probably sometime or other, so you might check about that. And also, especially, Janet Grant and Jerry Lindman and Stacy. Would you please welcome our band for this evening? It's the band with no name.
I'll be the whole band. So I'm going to play one song here. This is a song called Soldier. And I wrote it for my mom. And I think I've played it every day for the last 426 days, I think, since I've written it. And it's one of the songs that I... Why she's pretty sick. And so I wrote this for her. And she lives in Ohio, and I live in Seattle. And so it's one of those songs that I do sing every day as a way to kind of be with her. So it's called Soldier.
Flutter by, circle down, delicate wing advances. A northern blue drawn to you, as if you were Saint Francis. Newly born, crescent orange. Perching on your finger, flutter by, circle down, looking for a sign. A northern blue ascending you, deeming her divine. Newly born, crescent orange, a messenger proclaiming you are a soldier. These are your days, and you have been yearning in so many ways. You are a soldier. You are a soldier now. in the midst of the garden. Down upon your knees, you are fighting faith and family while fighting this disease. And now you are a soldier, and these are your days, and you have been yearning in so many ways. You are a soldier. You are a soldier now. Flutterbys circle down. Delicate wing advances, a northern blue drawn to you as if you were Saint Francis. Newly born, crescent orange, perching on your finger.
We're going to start off with an old tune. First, hillbilly recording, country music for other people, written by a Texas that went on to sing light opera in New York and made extra money by doing hillbilly recordings. Vernon Dalhart. I'm sure you all recognize that name. This is called The Wreck of the Old 97. If you're a Kingston Trio fan, you might recognize the melody. And I do not subscribe to or understand the moral of the whole story, which is the last verse. Waiting 1 second. Yeah, it's those banjo players that... How do you know a banjo player's at the front door? He keeps on knocking and doesn't know when to come in.
can see the spot where he lost the leverage. You can see what a jump he made. Now come down to 90 miles an hour and a whistle broke in the stream. He was found in the wreck with his hand on the throttle, scalded to death by the steam. Words to your good love and hush that he may leave you and never return.
Okay, now we're going to move up to about 1971. Yeah, Christoph, it's 3 years before you were born. Can see. She was a level-headed dancer on the road to alcohol. I was just a singer on the way to Montreal. Well, she pressed her chest against me about the time the jukebox broke. Gave me a peck on the back of the neck, and these are the words she spoke. Said, blow up the TV, throw away the paper, move to the country, build yourself a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches, try to find Jesus on your own. Table and I acted real naive. I knew that topless lady had something up her sleeve. Well, she danced around the room a while. She did the hoochie coo, singing a song all night long, telling me what to do. She said, blow up the TV, throw away the paper, move to the country, build yourself a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches, try to find Jesus on your own. She said she must know the answer, so I said, well, I'll give it a try. And to this day, we're living this way, and this is the reason why. We blew up the TV, threw away the paper, moved to the country, built ourselves a home, had a lot of children, fed them on peaches. We all found Jesus on our own. Okay, now we're going to do some classical music, just to round things out nicely.
Classical?
Yes. We're in C. I've just seen a face I can't forget, the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me. I want all the world to see we've met. La da 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 da. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. As it is, I'll dream of her tonight.
keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes, I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. For other girls would never life like this. La da 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 da. Falling, yes I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes I am falling, and she keeps calling. Forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me. I want all the world to see we've met. La da 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 da. And I'm falling, yes I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Keeps calling me back again. Oh, falling, yes I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
Okay, let's get a chair over here. Now once I lived the life of a millionaire, spent all my money, I just did not care. Took all my friends out for a mighty good time. Bought bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. Then I began to fall so low. Lost all my good friends, had nowhere to go. I get my hands on a dollar again. Don't hang on to it till that eagle grins. Yeah, well, no, 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 nobody knows you when you're down and out. In your pocket, not one penny. And as for friends, you don't have any. Thank you. No, 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 nobody knows you. When you're down and out, in your pocket, not one penny. And as for friends, you don't have any. When you finally get back on your feet again, everybody wants to be your long lost friend. I said it's strange, without a doubt, nobody knows you. Nobody knows you. Nobody knows you when you're down and out.
This is portion three, and we'll do a poem, and then a song, and then a poem, and then a song, and then a poem, and big finish, go home. This is called Song for Jenny, and it has, actually the subtitle is longer than the poem. A mountain poem hummed in three-part harmony by rain and summer thunder and some unnamed voice in future tense. Whispering. Jenny, dancing mittens, dancing whittle chips and snow. Shake a shawl to banjo soft and slow before the open cabin door. Hold a willing bird in one hand. Breathe the breath of babes and tap leather toes and wheel on boot heels made of gold. Sprinkle crumbs upon the water. Taste a fever in the air. Let your hair fly out of rhythm, out of tune. But tilt the bottle gently. Sign a name upon the pane and push the curtains back into the room. I draw the oaken rocker out where the porch has fallen. And consider whether gathering eggs will wait an hour or more. Now close your eyes and whistle all the songs you can remember. And then close the book in darkness on the floor.
That's blooming in the mountains so high.
somewhere a happy smile and life will be worthwhile. Forgive the tears, but don't forget to smile. You are my flower that's blooming in a mountain so high. You are my flower that's blooming there for me.
Waiting well. I'm the one who lies awake a spell each morning, listening only. This is my way I try on the day. I'm the one who holds five cedars in my heart, far away as they are from where I live for now. I see the river and can hardly believe what I think she means to be showing me. I'm the one who walks far. I don't know what's around the next corner in the road, or any road, or any bend in any river. I know only that I have to go, and that the bends are there waiting for my discoveries. I am the one who works at waiting well. That's a little Bob Dylan for those of you who don't remember. Tomorrow is a long time. If today was not an endless highway, if tonight were not a crooked trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all. I can't see my reflection in the water. I can't speak the sounds that show no pain. I can't hear the echo of my footsteps. I can't remember the sound of my own name. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, and only if I could hear her heart a softly pounding, and only if she was lying by me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. There's a beauty in the silver singing river. There's a beauty in the sunrise in the sky, but none of these and nothing else can touch the beauty that I remember in my true love's eyes. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, and only if I could hear her heart a softly pounding, and only if she were lying beside me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. If today was not an endless highway, if tonight was not a crooked trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all. Coming from Kansas, I'm used to very plain places, no pun intended. That's why I moved to Plain. If you've never been to Plain, Washington, you really ought to go there. We only have about four businesses. There's the Plain Hardware and the Just Plain Grocery, Just Plain Laundromat. There is the Beaver Hill Cafe. They've gotten kind of fancified. And then above the Plain Hardware, there is a registered massage person. I think she also gives shampoos and sets. It's kind of a deal. It's pretty quiet. Well, this kind of country out here just knocks a person out, but I have an affinity and affection for ugly places. And it can strike me just any old time. This poem is about that. It's called Something for Nothing. I'll read the poem, and we've got a song. Again, I thank you very much for coming, and I want you to honor the band in a big way when we finish that song, Something for Nothing. Under caps of lumpy, frozen snow, the sage along the road has become cauliflower. The land lies in soft wrinkles, and the sky is pulled tight behind the mountains, dim and waiting at the horizon. It is snowing again. 30 miles ago, sheep and ponies stood together in a pen with thick white shawls crested to their backs. And they passed something black frozen to the shoulder of the freeway. We consider turning on the radio, but I have Ian singing Double Diamond in my head and don't want to give it up. Seeing a particular rise in the land, I take to it, remembering that feeling I've had before in other places. Places unspectacular on the surface that seem somehow holy anyway, and stay in me against all odds. All of it, the scrubby plants, the huddled animals, the snow on the road, the wind, the sky, the frozen land, strikes me as precious, handsome in ways I can't explain. I try. But you can't be blamed that the colors drained from your voice. I've heard the same from others. There's nothing here. And that is all. It mentions Ian in here. That's Ian Tyson of Ian and Sylvia. And we're going to end with one of Ian Tyson's Canadian folk and country singer, one of Ian Tyson's biggest, best songs. It's been covered by loads and loads of people. If you know any of Four Strong Winds, please join in. Thank you very much, and good night.